This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Today, it's a great pleasure for me to have back in the studio Jane Slaughter of Labor Notes, based in Detroit. Jane's the author of Concessions and How to Beat Them and co-author with Mike Parker of two other books on unions. She's been with Labor Notes for more than 30 years now, almost continuously. Jane Slaughter, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thanks, Matt. It's great to be back.
For the listener who doesn't know what Labor Notes is, why don't you tell us?
Okay, we're a publication, 32 years old now. Our slogan is, let's put the movement back in the labor movement. We are the voice of people who are trying to do that, and we not only have our monthly magazine, but we also put on schools and conferences and publish books.
The movement does seem to be back in the labor movement to some extent. Now, what accounts for that?
Well, I was hoping you would tell me that. I think it's a reaction to the extreme takeaways that are coming down in so many states from these newly elected zealot governors who want to take away collective bargaining rights, take away the right to strike, take away money, take away things that people have been used to having for many years. And as you know, the response here in Wisconsin was, frankly, the most impressive that I've seen in all my years in the labor movement to the attack that's been going on against us. So you tell me, Matt, why Wisconsin?
Well, to some extent, it's a riddle. One of the answers is that Wisconsin has a long progressive history. The progressive movement got started here with fighting Bob La Follette, at least a radical wing of the progressive movement. And Robert La Follette has lionized in state culture, their high schools and streets named after him. I mean, people grow up knowing the story of fighting Bob La Follette. So that's part of it. Madison is part of it because Madison has retained a radical tradition here that grew out of the university with its radical historiography in the 50s and 60s, and then the anti-war movement in the 60s and 70s. And there's just a hardcore of people who can be counted on to protest. But that's like 150 or 200 or max 500 people. And the first big demonstration here was 10,000 people, which was shocking. And obviously they were way, way beyond the core of activists. And you had union people who showed up from all around the state, even on that first day, and so part of it is just at some point people aren't going to take it anymore, and we reach that point here in Wisconsin with the radical takebacks by Governor Scott Walker, and people showed up. That was the surprising thing, that they showed up in such numbers at the beginning, and then it just kept snowballing and snowballing, which was even more exciting to watch. I think the Republicans here in Wisconsin thought they were going to get away with it. I thought they had reason to think that because people had been taking it and taking it and taking it, with unemployment at, 15 million people unemployed officially and millions more and all these people getting kicked out of their homes. And people took that too. And so it was not unrealistic for these hardcore reactionaries to think, well, we can just keep grabbing. And surely they wanted to keep grabbing while people were asleep, because it's harder to grab when people are waking in your face. And yet we've had this dramatic comeback here, fight back here in Wisconsin. Part of it is Egypt, actually.
Yes, that was really noticeable, even from afar.
Egypt. And this happened just like 10 days, 2 weeks after the revolution in Egypt. You had people on the very first day holding signs that said, welcome to Tahrir Square, or, Scott Hosni Walker was one. I mean, so there was this, infectious response to mass nonviolent protest that was going on in Egypt, was on people's screens. And we had it here, and then it got a momentum of its own. And the unions did play a part here, the local unions, especially the teachers' union, that called the teachers out, which was a very daring thing to do on a Wednesday. The head of the teachers' union called the school board superintendent and said, we're not going to be there, so cancel school because there's not going to be enough teachers there. And the teachers walked out on that Wednesday, even though technically it was illegal for them to do so, and they did it again on Thursday and on Friday.
And on the following Monday.
And on Monday, and it was really dramatic and lent a great deal of momentum to what's been happening ever since. I think Jesse Jackson helped out here in Wisconsin by showing up so many times. There weren't a lot of people who showed up. Eventually, Michael Moore came once, and Susan Sarandon came, but it was Jesse Jackson who really gave people a sense of belonging to a movement and connecting up with the civil rights movement. And he had a line that says, you know, we've gone from Wallace to Walker, which resonated with people. And, you know, the polite Midwesterners here would have chants of thank you, after he'd give a speech, which was very kind of cute. But, yeah, I think this thing isn't going away. It's not going away in Wisconsin. I think these Republican state senators are going to be recalled. I think Governor Walker is going to be recalled by, you know, February or March of 2012. And I think in other states, I mean, we've seen the infection, positive infection, go to other states, to Ohio, to New Jersey. There is to New Hampshire, to some extent in Michigan. And so people are picking up on this fight back. And another interesting thing has been the solidarity rallies that were held around the country for Wisconsin. In L.A., they had thousands of people saying, you know, we're Wisconsinites. So that's... The solidarity has been really striking to me. I mean, not only national solidarity, but traditional solidarity across occupations. I mean, it wasn't just public sector workers who were out here in Wisconsin. So it's been quite something to experience here in Madison, just three blocks from my office at the Progressive, Jane. But I'm not supposed to be the one talking all the time, so I'm wondering what your sense of it is. You've been studying the labor movement, writing about the labor movement, in the labor movement for more than three decades.
Well, one thing I would point to is evidence of something that may be similar to what's going on in Wisconsin. In Ohio, they just passed their terrible bill on Wednesday, but they happen to have a provision in their law there that if you get enough signatures, the law can be put on hold, and it doesn't get implemented until the voters get a chance to vote on it in the next election. So the labor movement there will be circulating petitions, getting this law on hold and putting it in front of the voters this very next November. And they think they have a good chance to turn it down that way. So it's another example where people are not letting the fact that a law passed be the final word.
It's strange, this attack on public sector workers. It's not as though public sector workers are getting fat and happy. You know, in Wisconsin, there have been no wage increase. There's been a wage freeze for like 3 years. There have been actually wage cuts if you count the forced furloughs. And no one's, you know, been getting a lot of increases over the last many years. And yet the Republican and right-wing corporatists have generated this whole ideology that, you know, public sector's workers are entitled or spoiled or somehow, you know, raking it in compared to everybody else. And everybody else, rather than having decent benefits, should be, and the public sector workers should be reduced to the lowest paid workers and mm-hmm. worst benefit.
And yet the studies show that when you look at comparable experience in education, the public sector workers are actually making about 4% less than their counterparts in the private sector. And that includes both the benefits and the wages. So it's just factually not true that the public employees are fat cats.
And it may be that the Republican governors and their strategists believe their own propaganda, thinking that, you know, there's all this huge well of resentment toward public sector workers. But when the polls came out, it was 2-1 in favor of public sector workers.
Yes. Wasn't that interesting? It's, you know, when it's your kid's teacher. You know, it's the firefighters. It's the person at the DMV. You know, we have, you know, basically good experiences with public sector workers. My garbage gets picked up every week on time.
And, you know, and also I think a lot of people, at least in Wisconsin, they have one of the spouses works for the city or the state in order to get health insurance. It's true certainly of farmers, where one of the spouses goes gets a state job or a city job for the benefits. And people understand that, you know, it's the only way they can keep their head above water. If they're going to cut that out, well, they're not going to be able to make it. And so I guess this was a real sense of an attack on the middle class. And that's what we heard time and time again here in Wisconsin. And what impressed me, too, was then it wasn't just the public sector workers. You had the boilermakers out there. You had the laborers, the construction workers, the electrical workers. The UE was out here. I mean, you had everybody out here. And even this attempt to divide public sector workers from public sector workers, which is to say in Wisconsin, the governor tried to get the firefighters and the cops mm-hmm. divided off from everybody else because he let them keep their benefits mm-hmm. and everyone else was going to lose their mm-hmm. collective bargaining rights. That didn't work either because the firefighters and many of the police officers rallied to the support of other public sector workers. Very impressive, actually.
Yeah, that's the definition of solidarity, when people come out when it's not their skin on the line.
I'm curious about how you assess the national labor leadership involved in this. To what extent is the AFL-CIO in Washington taking a leadership role? Are they followers of what's going on as far as that goes?
Well, I think they were as much taken by surprise as everyone else, and there's a story going around that when Rich Trumka, the president of the AFL-CIO, was here in town, he said the membership is way out ahead of the leadership on this one, and that was certainly true. I think that they did the right thing by calling a National Day of Action for April 4th, and encouraging union members all around the country in every kind of workplace to do something, you know, decide locally, but do something, whether it's a T-shirt day or a little rally at lunchtime or whatever it would be. So I'm eager to see how that's going to turn out. I think that'll, you know, depend on the strength of the unions in the different places, but I understand that probably the place where it will be observed the most will be here in Madison, where you're bound to have a big rally again.
Yeah, we've had rallies of, well, the first day was 10,000, then it was like 15,000, and then Jesse Jackson came on a Thursday and there were like 35,000, and then that weekend there was, you know, 75,000, and then the next weekend there was up 100,000 or 115,000. And so there is this, and I'm feeling it and hearing it from friends, that there's a sense that, you know, we need to get back out there. You know, every Saturday or every other Saturday anyway until this thing is settled. Part of me wonders whether even here in Wisconsin but also nationally, there's just not a sense of the power that this mass movement actually has in its hands, at its disposal. In a sense, it's being channeled into recall efforts of Democrats or, again, within, you know, Democratic Party politics, one race or another. And yet there's something so much more powerful and potential there that I think is being missed or neglected. How do you assess that?
Well, I think the rallies have been an absolutely crucial part of all this. People wouldn't know how much support they had unless they could see themselves all together there in the square. And that's been also the thing that's been so amazing about this, watching from outside, is the sustained nature of it. You know, usually there's one big rally and then everybody goes home. For it to keep happening and keep happening has just been, as I've written in labor notes, this is the most impressive response to the employer's offensive since it began over 30 years ago.
Yeah, I've
been
making...
This is literally the most impressive. So, however, there has been a component that's been largely missing, and I'm not really saying this in a critical way because I understand how difficult it is, but the thing that really throws sand into the gears of the system is when people either strike or when they do something that's more disruptive, some sort of civil disobedience or direct action perhaps. And that's why, as you were saying, the teachers' action was absolutely crucial to all this. The fact that they went out, it's not legal, they took their chances, they showed everybody how deeply they felt about it, and that made everybody else feel like they needed to join in. And frankly, I was kind of hoping for a similar response after March 9th when Scott Walker rushed the bill through in the illegal manner that he did. I was kind of hoping maybe there would be more of a response at the workplace level, not only the rally that happened. So people apparently didn't feel ready for that.
Well, there's been a discussion. I'm sitting with Jane Slaughter of Labor Notes. You're listening to Progressive Radio. I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of The Progressive. There's been a lot of discussion about a potential general strike. People have been throwing that around. And I remember going up to one of the Teamsters who was outside their big truck that had been parked on the square almost every day for the protests. And I was talked to one of the guys. He said, well, our steward is over here. And I asked the steward what his reaction was to the general strike. No, we're not going to do it. There's been no discussion of it, and there's essentially not going to be, is what he told me. And if the Teamsters aren't going to get involved, it'd be hard to see how that general strike was going to work. So I asked him, well, what about a slowdown on the highway? You could get trucks three across going 40 miles an hour or whatever you want to do. And that would slow things down considerably on I-90, I-94 in Wisconsin. But he wasn't up for that either. And a lot of people are thinking, well, it's just too dangerous. The people lose their jobs. I mean, they just get fired. I mean, with the state workers or public sector workers, the bill says that, even though it's in limbo now, the bill says if you engage in an action for 3 days, you can be fired summarily.
Yeah.
So they're real severe penalties.
Pretty bad. that's why I was thinking that if there had been a reaction immediately after the bill happened, before it went into effect, that would have been the time to really capture people's anger. And if everyone had gone out, at least everyone in the public sector, all the AFSCME members as well as the teachers, then they would have had the experience of striking too. It wouldn't have been something that only the teachers had. And it's a really transformative experience to go on strike, especially if you're doing it, illegally.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that people should do that still? I mean, if this thing becomes law, I mean, they may railroad it through another time. And it's possible that, you know, all the state workers would walk out, or all the state workers with, you know, a lot of these private sector workers could walk out for a day anyway.
I think if the union movement is that together to organize that, then that would be a fantastic expression of rage, resistance, defiance, saying that we're not going to put up with this. I haven't seen the signs, though, that that's being organized, and I'm sure it's not going to happen spontaneously.
Well, the one positive thing was the South Central Federation of Labor in Wisconsin, which is where Madison and Dane County is, has endorsed a general strike if the individual unions voted for it. They don't have power to call a general strike themselves. So that was one formal affirmation of that possibility. Mm-hmm. There was a general strike, Gene Slaughter, in Ontario 10-15 years ago, in the face of other drastic public sector cutbacks, I believe. Do you recall that and how that worked?
It was a whole series, actually. I believe it even lasted, if I remember right, over a year and a half. Each city took turns. The first one was in a relatively conservative city. They went there first, London, Ontario, and the way they organized it was that people would do what they call cross picketing, like the workers in the beer distillery would go picket at the factory of the automobile workers and vice versa, so that you weren't picketing your own factory. I guess your own employer would not see you for whatever that was worth. And the whole place was shut down on a Friday, and then they had a massive rally on a Saturday. And they repeated that sort of pattern in different cities across the province of Ontario. And from everything that I know from talking to people there, you know, we're in Detroit, where we're right next to Ontario, people said that it was an amazing experience, that they brought in other people who were not in the labor movement. They had, you know, community partners as well. However, they were not successful, ultimately, in stopping the government from doing the things that it wanted to do.
And what do you say to the person who says, wow, you know, general strike sounds good, but I'm going to lose my job?
Well, I would say that is a good reason to think about it very carefully. But we aren't doing this as one person. I mean, there would be no reason for one person to do a general strike. It wouldn't be very general. The only way it works is if everybody goes out and they can't fire everybody. That's the only way it works.
Because they can't fire the prison guards, because who'd run the prison, and they can't fire, you know, anyone who's, you know, everyone who's working government or everyone.
Are they going to replace, you know, 2,700 teachers in the city of Madison? Are they going to replace 98,000 members of the Wisconsin Education Association? I don't think so.
Or as my wife likes to say, you know, let the National Guard come in and, you know, give Scott Walker an IV if he's in the hospital.
Or the coal miners used to have a saying, you can't mine coal with bayonets.
So there you go. So, I mean, I don't think it's ruled out a general strike in Wisconsin at some point, because there has been this talk of it, and I think there's a growing awareness that if they push this thing through, which they might, they're so reckless, this Republican administration, that the only language they respond to is power. I'm speaking with Jane Slaughter of Labor Notes in Detroit. She's been there for about 30 years, and before that you were actually working in the auto plants yourself, weren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, for a short time.
And what was that like?
Well, I always told myself I would never forget what a terrible job that was. You know, when you worked in the plant, there was all this competition to get the good jobs and not to be on the bad jobs. They are all bad jobs in a factory. However, they've gotten so much worse since the implementation of lean production methods in the plant. And it's not even as well paid a job as it used to be, you know, relatively speaking back then. I mean, it used to be that you put up with the horrible monotony of the assembly line because you had good pay, great benefits. That's starting to go away. So I don't know if they're going to be able to get as many people to work in those, mind-numbing jobs for $14 an hour, which is the plan.
And it's gotten worse because of lean production. What do you mean by that? It's work speed up?
Speed up is the essence of lean production. It's a method of organizing work that essentially builds speed up into the system, sort of makes it a closed loop feedback so that all the processes are feeding into each other to make sure that the worker is keeping up at all times. And the methods initially were developed by Toyota. They came into this country by means of a joint venture between General Motors and Toyota. It was the NUMMI plant in California. It was sort of famous. And from there, it spread throughout the auto industry and to all other industries as well. The NUMMI plant actually had a little side business in giving tours and teaching other people how to do lean production. So it involves a general tightening of the screws. It involves more outsourcing so that as much of the work as possible is done someplace cheaper. It's led to a great reduction in the workforce as well as a great increase in repetitive stress injuries.
And this is kind of the model across industries now. I mean, you have this incredible increase of productivity. I mean, they haven't hired more workers during this recession, even formally after the recession, corporate America hasn't. They've just squeezed more and more out of their shrinking workforce. I read a statistic that was shocking that productivity in the United States has quadrupled. It doubled and then it doubled again over the last 4 years when they were just savagely cutting their workforce.
Well, even I am shocked by that figure.
I mean, they've made a lot of profit. And they've squirreled away a lot, and they haven't done it by hiring anyone.
Well, I understand that profits are at an almost record high in the last 3 months of 2010.
Well, I think that's how they did it, because they have cut their labor costs so much and squeezed so much more production out of people. They're selling the products, and they're paying much less to make them on the labor side.
Yeah, and it's so amazing to think that, it was only 2.5 years ago that the bankers and their corporate friends almost put the whole worldwide economy into the toilet. They almost pushed us into another Great Depression. And instead of feeling any embarrassment about that, maybe submitting to some regulation so that, it wouldn't happen again, they are on a tear. Last November, they, elected all these new people like Scott Walker and Rick Snyder in Michigan and Mitch Daniels in Indiana, and they're going for the whole thing.
Yeah, the greed is really unbounded. You talked about Governor Snyder there in Michigan. He's doing something that Scott Walker isn't even doing. He's privatizing local governments and replacing them with emergency managers. I don't know how he's going to get away, how he's gotten away with that, but that is an astonishing assault on democracy, for one thing, and also on union rights, because he can, or his financial private managers can go in and just rip up the union contracts.
Exactly. And as I understand it, it's all contracts. He can yank out the elected leaders of any school district or town or city or county and replace them with his paid person. And the emergency financial manager can be either an individual or a corporation. Interesting. He can rip up all contracts and forbid the elected officials from running for office for 10 years in that locality. It's just an incredible assault on democracy. And he assures us, it's not going to be used very often. But if you have that threat hanging over your head, I think it's going to be pretty scary consequences.
And what's the fight back like in Michigan?
Well, it hasn't been as much as here in Wisconsin, I have to say. We have had some, fairly sizable demonstrations in Lansing. but not to the extent they should have been. Now, one thing that is interesting is that the statewide teachers union is conducting a statewide strike vote. Quite unheard of. You know, we certainly were not expecting this to happen. But the way I heard it is they had sent busloads of teachers up here to Wisconsin to join in one of the big rallies. They sent 100 people. And the day after those people came back, the president of the union sent out a letter instructing all of her locals to discuss and take a strike vote.
It does. It is having a positive effect. I saw a postal worker steward from Chicago who came up with about 30 people, and he said, you know, if we don't stop it here, we're not going to stop it anywhere. And so that showed real awareness, I think, of the national dimensions of this fight back here in Wisconsin. The other thing that's happening in Michigan that is happening in other states like Florida and a couple others is this reduction of unemployment benefits from 26 weeks to 20 weeks, which is just shocking to me. And then one state won't even take federal money to increase the unemployment compensation at a time when the unemployment rate is still at, you know, above 8.5%.
I guess they think those layabouts should just get off their couches and get out there and get a job. What's wrong with them? The auto industry is offering jobs at $14 an hour. What's your problem?
But they're like five people for every job, too, I hear.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's amazing, the savagery of this Republican assault. I don't know where it's going to stop.
Well, it won't stop until we make it. And like we were saying before, they are not shy about, you know, well, the contrast between, you know, the labor movement's demands in the last few years have been, please, please, just let us keep what we've got. And their demands are not modest at all. They want to go for a situation where the ethos in the country is anybody who has a job should feel lucky to have a job. You should never raise your voice about the conditions of that job or your salary. You should be happy with what you've got, and you should say, thank you, Mr. Nice Rich Man, for giving me that job.
It is a total maximalist approach. There's no doubt about that. We've got in the private sector, unionization level only at about 7% now. Why has that fallen so drastically?
Well, lots of reasons. One is actually just reducing the number of jobs that were union jobs, both through the speed up that we've been talking about, the increase in productivity, globalization, where some jobs have gone overseas. So the manufacturing jobs that used to be heavily unionized, there just aren't as many of them anymore. I would say that's the main one. It isn't that there's not been a giant wave of decertifications. It's been taking away the jobs that were unionized.
You've been at Labor Notes almost more than 30 years, Jane Slaughter. Why are you still at it?
Well, it provides benefits, which is something to say in this day and age. No, the real reason is that it's in my blood to feel part of this struggle. And I have to tell you, Matt, I was starting to wonder if we were ever going to see anything like we've seen in Wisconsin in the last month ever again before I was old enough to retire. And it's just like a real shot in the arm. And that's the kind of stuff that I live for, is those moments that, you know, bring a tear to the eye and a shot of adrenaline to the heart.
Yeah, as I say, I've died and gone to heaven too. So, Jane Slaughter, thanks so much for being my guest today on Progressive Radio.
Thank you.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.